We want today to look internally and talk about friends and families inside the church. We want to really, really talk about Palm Beach Lakes today. Look at it in so many respects. And just talk about how God has made us to be a family, and that this is what a family looks like, and this is everything that's involved in being a part of God's family. But that's what we're going to do the next hour. And so this hour, I want us to talk about us being friends. Now, when you think of friendship in the Bible, who do you think of? Let's just go ahead and open up and speak out loud enough so everybody can hear you. When you think of good friends in the Bible, who do you think of? Isn't that amazing? When I started my outline, that's exactly where I started. When I started making my list to start thinking about friends and families in the Bible, Jonathan and David. That's really, really amazing. And it's ironic, by the way, that the word friends is not used in relationship to David and Jonathan. That's our way of describing that special relationship that they have. Now then, let's talk about it. Who is Jonathan? Who's Jonathan's father? King Saul, all right? Who'll be the next king after King Saul? Huh? Well, who it turns out to be is David, who should have been the next king after King Saul. Isn't that amazing? Here is the crown prince. Here is the second most important person in the entire nation. That's remarkable, isn't it? And yet, he gives it all up because of his friendship with David. I want you to think about that for just a minute. Because later in this lesson, we're going to talk about, what a friend is like and everything that is involved in being a friend. That'll be later in this lesson. But first, in your own minds, what if you had to write down two sentences about Jonathan and David and what made that relationship so very, very special. I wonder what you'd write down in your own mind. What would you write down? What attribute did Jonathan have that created this kind of relationship? You stop and think about it. It's remarkable in and of itself because there's no reason. Because you see, David becomes a threat to Jonathan. David becomes a threat to Jonathan early in Jonathan's life. How long was Saul king before God decided he would not be a king? You got to be a good Bible student to know this one. How long was it? How long had Saul been king before God said that the kingdom would be taken away from Saul? Any idea? How long did he reign? 40 years. That's the easy one. Harold Pack says, anytime you ask a Bible question, how long or how many, there are only two answers, 7 and 40. And so, if you'll think that through, now then, don't answer this 7 and 40 because that'll be wrong. How long was it from the time Saul became king until God said, you and your descendants will never be king? Anybody have any idea? How long does it take to mess it up? Huh? Somebody, well, I do it in a hurry. I can mess that up in 3 years. Somebody, well, I can do it in 2 years. Name that tune or whatever it is. Do you remember how long it was? It was 1 year. Isn't that amazing? Within 1 year of King Saul becoming king, God said, Saul, your descendants are never going to be king. Jonathan will never, ever, ever be a king. That's remarkable. And so here is the crown prince. Here's Jonathan. And he, if he were of an evil heart, if he were that kind of an evil heart, I'm telling you, he could have maneuvered some things to sort of make them happen, couldn't he? You think about those opportunities that he might have had. And just think about that relationship. And our study is not a Saul and David. Our study is just talk about that special relationship they had. Saul was trying to kill David, you remember the songs that they sang about King Saul? You remember the first verse of that song they sang about King Saul? Saul has killed what? Isn't that a beautiful song? Saul has killed his thousands. Well, that's what they wanted. They wanted a king that could lead them in battle. And so they really had a song that they sang. Saul has killed his thousands. You know the second verse? Yeah, that's it. David has killed his 10,000. So King Saul is ready to kill David. Now, where's Jonathan fit in all of this? If there's any similarity at all of the attitude that Jonathan had and the attitude that King Saul had, Jonathan would have done everything he possibly could to have brought about the death of David. You remember the story of David not knowing whether to come back into the king's palace or not? You remember that conflict that David did not know whether he ought to go back and sit at Saul's table because he'd been there. The statement was, your seat will be empty and you'll be missed at that feast. And so Jonathan goes and asks his dad about David and about the relationship to David. And then there's a secret code. Did you ever have passwords and secret codes? I'm not talking about computer passwords, but is there a subtle message? Is there a way that you can look at your husband and give him a message that is a subtle message nobody else on earth can get? It's an amazing thing. You can give your husband a look. You can give your kids a look. Your mama and daddy can give you a look that will say, I'm going to kill you if you ever do that again. And nobody else in the room will ever know that message has been delivered. They had a secret code. It had to do, and think about this story, it had to do with the shooting of arrows. Any of you young people over here in junior high remember that story about the shooting of arrows and the secret code it was? David and Jonathan were out in the field. David was some distance away, and Jonathan is there, and to modernize it, he's got his golf club and golf balls. And he's knocking these balls, and he's got somebody down there shagging the balls down there. There's a young man that's shagging the balls down there. Here's the secret message. I'm going to hit a ball. I'll get back to the real Bible story in a minute. And whenever the guy's looking for the ball that I've just hit, if I'd said, you've got to go farther. You've got to go farther away. That's the coded message, David. Don't you dare come back to the king's palace. Now, it wasn't hitting golf balls, it was shooting arrows. That in and of itself shows the value of arrows. He's out there shooting arrows, and so Jonathan shoots the arrow. David's hidden out in the distance. And when the young man goes and looks for the arrows, it's remarkable. He didn't have a clue, one of those secret passwords. And so Jonathan says to that man who's chasing the arrow, it's much farther away. That's a coded message to David. Get out of here. Do you know all it would have taken would have been one sentence and King David would have been dead? Friendship. Folks, in the church, there's got to be that kind of friendship. You know, he loved him as his own brother. And you and I need to have an understanding of the fact that we're friends of God. And because we're friends of God, we're friends of each other. And as we think about Palm Beach Lakes, we need to think about this as being the place where my friends are found. Now let me ask you this. Can you think of any friendship in the Bible between older people and younger people? Any friendship in the Bible between those who are anciently old in the Bible and those who are teenagers in the Bible? Who? Paul and Timothy. Naomi and Ruth. I hadn't thought about that one, that special relationship between Naomi and Ruth. What an unbelievable friendship that is. Yeah, that may be better than Paul and Timothy. I thought about Elijah and Elisha also as older people and younger people. And there are some there are some really good things happening in the church right now. And we ought to all be thankful and appreciative of it. And in the absence of Casey as working with our young people, you know what's happened in this church? It's the thing we prayed about Wednesday night when somebody turned in a card. Kathy, was that you that turned in the card and said, I want to thank those adults who went with the teens on that trip they made up to Disney. You guys have been to, what was it, CYC you went to? With some anciently old people carrying you up there, right? Well, one of them was elder by his very place in the church, right? But you stop and think about it. There is that special relationship that you can have. And in our mind, when we think about our friends, we think about those who are younger than us and those who are older than us. And we think that's who our friends are. We think about, well, the teens' closest friends are the teens. We think about the young professional, very difficult for them to have friends. But if they do have friends, they're in that old group. Older people only have older people. You see, there's Bible precedence in there for there to be friendship between those of various ages and everything. I don't want to get too much in the sermon itself, but in your family, you're not just friends of those who are your siblings. I want you to think about that in relation. And so in the Bible, here's this relationship between Saul and David, or Jonathan and David, and the relationship between Paul and Timothy. That's a remarkable, remarkable relationship. Wish we had time to talk about it. Guys, imagine, I have no idea how old Timothy was. Teenager? In my imagination, when I read the book of Acts, he's just been baptized on Paul's first missionary journey. Second missionary journey, Paul goes through that place where in that city where Timothy had lived at Lystra and says, okay, I want Timothy to go with me. Timothy's father was a pagan. Can you imagine? He grew up in a home where dad was a pagan. And all of a sudden, here is the great apostle Paul that says, Timothy, would you come and go with me? That's remarkable. And that in and of itself says something about, as we think about friendship, friendship is not based on age. Probably go ahead and make this point now, lest we fail to make it in the sermon, and that is, young people, there are some grandparents here that don't have any grandchildren, and they need you to adopt them. And grandparents, there are some of you here who need to adopt some grandchildren. Why? Because we're family. And in our minds, that's the very thing there's got to be. And I'm getting over into today's sermon. I got to back away from that. But we've got to understand. We've got to rethink what friendship is all about. Okay, let's talk about the other one that I thought about. And that was, I wrote down a list of verses about Job and his friends. Is that a friendship? You have any friends like Job had? You remember the adversity that Job had in his life, and his friends came to console him. They got there. Now, I want you to imagine this. You've had the worst thing that could ever happen in your life. And here are the three best friends that you have on this earth. At least in their estimation, they were some of Job's best friends. And your friends come and they help you and they sit there for one full day and they never even say a word. You know what they look at him? Do with him? Just look at him. And I don't know whether they sleep outside or what. The second day, guess what they're doing? Oh, now they're going to say, Job, we're here for you. You know, we're your friend, Job. We're here for you. Guess what? They look at him. The third day. The fourth day. Harold Pack, how long do you think they looked at him before they said anything? 7 days. I want you to think about that kind of. You have any friends like that? You know, I was amazed that Jesus calls Judas his friend when Judas has come to kiss Jesus and to betray him. He uses the word friend to describe that relationship. Listen to these verses. You got your Bibles? Look in Job chapter 12. And there are some verses there where Job says, somebody read verse 4. Job chapter 12, verse 4. You got it? Who's got it? Go ahead, out loud, it would help. I'm mocked by my friends. Look in chapter 16, verse 20. Got any friends like Job's got? 16:20. Who's got it? Read it out loud. Isn't that amazing? My friends scorn me, and my eyes pour out tears to God. You ought to read that slow enough to feel the emotions that's coming out of. This is Job's heart that's talking. Here are my friends, and they scorn me, and my eyes are. And you like that expression? My eyes are pouring out tears to God. At a time when you need friends. In chapter 19, verse 14. Who's got that? 19:14. My relatives have failed me, and my close friends have forgotten me. Look in verse 19. All my close friends abhor me, and those whom I have loved have turned against me. Verse 21, have pity on me, have pity on me, O you my friends, for the hand of God has struck me. And it's just remarkable. Wrong kind of friends. Can we talk about Jesus' friends? We've already mentioned Judas. Where did Jesus find his friends? Is that a fair question? How do people look at the apostles? These fish, yeah. Ignorant and unlearned. That's remarkable. You're talking about class distinction and words that separate people from another, ignorant and unlearned. Any other unusual occupations among those whom Jesus chose, who were closest to him all of those years? Tax collector. It's remarkable, isn't it? Look at the friends that Jesus had, and think about all of the friends that Jesus had, those closest to him. Simon Zelotes. Zelotes is a word we don't know. If we recognize, that means he's a zealot. Among the Jews, there were those individuals who were zealots. Z-E-A-L-O-T-S. Zealots. And their determination was to overthrow Rome at every cost. You know what he was? He was a terrorist. At least, that was that movement that there was in the first century world, and Jesus chose a terrorist to be his friend. It is remarkable, as you look and analyze Matthew and Mark and Luke, how different Luke is from every other of the writers of the life of Jesus. You know who Luke looks at? The untouchables. He looks at people that are overlooked. Matthew, though you might think he might talk about Zacchaeus, I do not believe he does. I know that Luke does. You stop and look how Luke writes and chooses as he's trying to help Theophilus understand what Jesus is like. And he says, let me tell you about Jesus. I've got an understanding. And here are all of these lepers. And Jesus is concerned about the lepers. And Jesus is trying to tell people those stories that will exemplify that God is concerned about insignificant people. So we've talked about good folks and bad folks, and I've got a whole bunches of other notes we could look at about all of this. I want us to spend some time here talking about the attributes that we need to have one for another. In the first place, as we think about these attributes that we need to have one for another, we need to understand that there is a word that we use a lot, agape. It's a Greek word for love. And agape love is that kind of love that sees the best in others. You want a friend? You want to be a friend to somebody else? When agape love is described in 1 Corinthians 13, we read that as though that's talking about emotional love. It's kind, you know, and all the attributes. It suffers long. And we think about that being an attribute that comes out of somebody that we really are in love with. That's not the word that is there. The word that is there is agape, which is the word that says, I look at those that are around me, and love thinketh no evil. That's remarkable. If I'm going to be your friend, and you're going to be my friend, if we're going to be friends one with another, if friendship is what is going to characterize this relationship that God has brought about in this church, and that is being friends, the thing there's got to be above every other thing is this matter of agape love that gives you the benefit of the doubt. Agape love does not immediately say, well, let me tell you what he did, and I will tell you exactly why he did that. How often do you hear that? Well, he just did that on purpose. Met a man at Ed Bonadonna's this week, an individual, 90 years of age. You want a new word, by the way, those of you who are older? He said, I've got 90-itis. I love that. I love that word. He and I struck up a conversation, and so I just said, do you remember Satchel Paige? And you should have seen him light up when I said Satchel Paige. And I said, well, you know what Satchel Paige said? He was a baseball player that probably 50 years of age when he became a professional. Nobody knows how old he was. It was part of that racial prejudice thing. I guess Jackie Robinson was first. Was Satchel Paige the second African-American to play baseball? Perhaps wasn't. But it was Larry Doby, I guess. And then maybe Satchel Paige after that. Anyway, they said, Satchel Paige, how old are you? He said, how old would you be? And I said it this way to Milton, the guy that I'd met. I said, and Satchel Paige said, how old would you be if you didn't know what year you were born? And that's it. How old are you? You got to think about what year you were born. If you don't have that as a marker. And he said, oh no, that's not what he said. And he said, how old would you be if you didn't know, if you didn't know how old you was? He corrected me about three times on that. And then he said, see, you lied about that. Well, I didn't lie. I'm just dumb. You know, I don't get the title Dumb Dan for nothing. But it says exactly the same thing. Agape doesn't. I look at you and you tell me something. I give you the benefit of the doubt. That's what friendship is based upon. It thinketh no evil. And young people, listen to me, especially while you're young. You develop that attitude, it'll change the way you look at the world the rest of your life. You ever see some of us old folks who are bitter and who are judgmental about everything that some young person does and never ever gives the benefit of the doubt? That's not an attribute they developed when they were, when they reached 80 years of age. It's an attribute of heart and an attribute of soul. And friendship says, I give you the benefit of the doubt. You know, judge not that you be not judged. What, there's that aspect of that. And if I want God to give me the benefit of the doubt, then I need to give other folks the benefit. Well, there's another thing, and that is agape applied in another way, and that is the idea of serving, sacrificially serving. We love Him because He first loved us. And again, we think about, that's talking about an emotional relationship, and we expect the other word to be there. That's not the word that's there. It's agape love. And all of a sudden, agape love says, I get myself out of the way in this friendship. And I see my place as serving others. That's what agape love does. Look not every man on his own things, but let him look on the things of others. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Do you understand the basis of friendship? Is an attitude that, let me serve you. I'm not sure exactly what's happening at Palm Beach Lakes right now. I am so excited about it, though. And the evidence of it is seen in as simple a thing as setting up tables. 5 years ago, we could say, we need to get all the tables set up. Need to get a large number. In fact, there was a time, you may remember, we need to get some hands up. You know, we need 10 or 12 people over there. Put your hands up. No, we need more hands. Need more hands. You know, we don't have to do that anymore. All we got to do is to say, after class tonight, we need to set up the tables. And we're having 20 to 30 individuals. Isn't that remarkable? You know what that is? That is an attitude in the heart and the soul of individuals. It says, give me something to do. Tyrone, you're one of my favorite people because of one sentence you said. Two sentences you said to me. One I needed on one Sunday night to have, David was out of town and needed someone to read the scriptures or something like that. And Tyrone saw me running around here, you know, frantic, and he said, what can I do? And the other one is, Tyrone on another occasion said, can you tell me something I can do to help? And that's not to say Tyrone's the only one who has that attitude, but I love it. See, that's what friendship is all about. You want to have friends? You want this church to mirror, you know, our friendship with God? You want it to mirror so that people can understand this? By this shall all men know that you're my disciples, if you what? If you have what? You know what? You know the word there? If you have agape. We have so wrapped up in our heads that love is all tied to my emotions that I never ever understand that it is manifested in the attitude that I have, and it's the attitude that causes me to give the benefit of the doubt to others, and it's the attitude that says, let me serve you. Let me serve you. I wish you could have been yesterday when the elders and deacons and preachers met and seen an attitude manifested by our deacons. You know, deacons are not dumber than elders. And yet there's a heart within those men that says, let me serve this church. See, that's what it's all about. And when in the next few weeks or so we begin talking about appointing new deacons, let me serve you. Patrick had just been baptized on a Monday or Tuesday of the previous week. And on Sunday, you remember when Patrick came forward and said, "I'm here to serve God"? You remember Jason and his wife came and said, "We want to serve God on another level"? And that's not to hold up individuals and say, "Let's all bow down and kiss their feet because they're the most wonderful folks in the world." And Tyrone, I wasn't trying to say you're better than any young person I know. But it is just an attitude that says, look, here is where this church is. And that's an attitude of, let me serve you. That's what's involved in the matter of friendship. And you see it in David and Jonathan, and you see it in every aspect of all of the relationships that's to be found. Let me show you another attribute. And there are several verses that talk about that, and the way I've described it is a friend just sticks with somebody. Through thick and thin, he's always there with his friend. Listen to these verses. First one from Psalms and then two from Proverbs. Psalms 15 says, "He does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend." What does that mean? What's the positive side of "he does not take up a reproach against his friend"? He's there for them. And because you know your friend, you're there to defend your friend. Not in the wrong that they've done. That's not what I'm talking about. But you know how easy it is to start a rumor about somebody else? This verse does not say he does not start a rumor. The rumor is already there. The reproach is already there. And all of a sudden somebody said, "Well, let me tell you about this." And so immediately he puts it on Facebook and everybody in the world knows about it. And some of the older folks are frowning, wondering, what on earth is Facebook? It's the party line that you used when you were, 50, 60 years ago. Picking up that party line on the phone, listening to what's happening in the neighbor's house, knowing what's going on. He doesn't take up a reproach. You want to be a friend? You want to have friends? You cannot be that individual who does that. Proverbs 16 says that a whisper separates the best of friends. Proverbs 17:9 said, "He who repeats a matter separates his friends." It's just remarkable, all of these verses that are there that talk about this matter of sticking with your friend. "You're my friends," Jesus said, "if you do whatever I command you." Doesn't make any difference what's happening in your life. There's that other aspect of that. He deals honestly with his friends. The Bible talks about the matter of friendship and the things that friendship does is that a friend sharpens his friends. And there is that concept that a reproach that is given, not a reproach, but words of rebuke that are given by somebody who is our friend has so much great meaning to us. You got to deal honestly with each other. I need to have the right, and you need to have the right, any time in our lives to come and say, "Dan, I need to talk to you about something that's in your life." Why? Because you love me and because you're my friend. And in the body of Jesus, the friendship that we need to have needs to be the kind of friendship where the rebuke of a friend becomes a blessing in our lives. That's friendship. There are those verses, we don't have time to look at them, that talks about if a man's got a lot of money, he'll have a lot of friends. You can think about that illustration, can you not? Think about the prodigal son in the foreign land. When he got back, you know what his older brother said? His older brother said, he's wasted the substance with riotous living with his friends. Those are not his friends. And as you think about creating friendships and having friendships, you need to understand the fact that there is that honesty with which we must deal with each other. I want to get to the one down here, lest I don't have enough time to get to it. And I've lost it in my notes here. Here it is. The verses on honesty are, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens his friends. Isn't that amazing? Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Let's go to the next one. I want to get to the one after this for sure. But he shares good fortune. We weep with those that weep, but we rejoice with those that rejoice. Two parables. The sheep were lost. He leaves the 99 sheep and he goes and finds the one friend. You know what he does? Or the one sheep, you know what he does? He calls together his friends and says, rejoice with me. And the lady who had lost the coin, she had 10 coins and lost one, swept the house. She calls her friends together. And Cornelius says, I've got all my friends here to hear everything that's commanded you of the Lord. And you could spend a lot of time talking about evangelism. The one I want to get to. A friend lets a friend sleep in. You want to nudge your wife or nudge your husband in relationship to that? He who blesses his friend with a loud voice rising early in the morning, it will be counted as a curse to him. You want to mark that in your Bible? That's Proverbs 27:14. My roommate in college, Charles Westbrook, he never had a class before chapel. I have no idea the whole time he was at Freed Hardeman how he could arrange a schedule. And I would get up early in the morning and I would just try to be bubbly and bright and everything. And he finally found this verse, and as I recall, he printed it out and put it above his bed. He may have put it on the ceiling above my bed so when I'd wake up, rising early in the morning, speaking to a loud voice is a curse. I sort of like that concept of that. Seriously. Attributes of a friend, and the last one we look at is the fact that because we're friends, we understand what it takes to be a friend. When the Bible says, he that has friends must show himself to be friendly, we misunderstand that. He that hath friends must do what? Well, he must be bubbly and smile at everybody and give them gifts. No. Look at that list, and we could have made this list three times as long of attributes of a friendship. If you want to have friends, this is the way you've got to be. Look at all of the things that are up there and how many of them are tied directly to this matter of agape love. You want to have friends? Well, put these attributes in your life. And all of a sudden, friends become yours. I love you. I'll defend you. I'll not take up a reproach. I'll be there. I will serve you. I will esteem you better than myself. I will agape you. I will not immediately look down on you and think about the worst thing you've ever done in your life. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I'll do all of the things that are there. I'll deal with you honestly, and I will share with you that which I have. And I'll let you sleep in. I just found that verse rather interesting and thought you'd like that one to be there. Friends and family day. You're my friends, Jesus said, if you do what I tell you. You've got to understand that. If I'm a friend of Jesus, and you are a friend of Jesus, guess what that makes us? By its very nature, it's friend. And there are two words that go sort of hand in hand. One is friendship, and the other biblical word is fellowship. And that's really what it means to be friends of each other in the kingdom of God. Thank you so much for the way you've listened.